The University of Washington's Institute of Health Metrics and Evaluation, or IMHE, estimates that American deaths from COVID-19 could total just under 379,000 by the end of the year. That's an increase of 179,000 or more deaths in just 4 months. In the shorter term, the IHME model predicts deaths during October will climb to 1,038 a day and 2,200 a day in November. There are dozens of other models. How does this work? Well, today we're going to take a look at two thought to be among the most reliable. Professor Lauren Ansel Myers is director of the COVID-19 Modeling Consortium at the University of Texas, Austin. They track cell phone data. Their prediction is similar to the University of Washington's, that deaths might go up from 1,000 to 2,000 a day in the near future. Professor Myers, welcome.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
And we've also got Nicholas Reich. He's a professor of biostatistics at the University of Massachusetts Amherst. His is considered one of the best of the most useful tools, the Ensemble model. Welcome to you as well.
Thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure to be on.
What do you use?
So we have been working with the CDC for the last 4 years to develop an approach that combines predictions from a bunch of different models around the country. Some of them use mobility data, others use data on the age structure of populations. But one of the things that we've seen is that some of the most accurate models tend to be the models that are the simplest. For example, one of the things that these models are trying to predict are how many new deaths over the next week. And some of the best, most accurate models only use counts of daily and weekly deaths.
That's so interesting. I mean, what you're saying is that the accumulated public health official reports on just how many deaths there have been is something that is the most beneficial for you.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, really, you don't need necessarily much more than just the public data sources that are out there for just a few weeks into the future.
Professor Myers, we know that you use cell phone data. How do you use that cell phone data?
We use cell phone data, first of all, because you know, human movement and human contact patterns are what fuel pandemics. The cell phone mobility data, it sort of gives us a useful window. We can see how many hours a day people are spending at home. We can see how often they're going out to places like bars and restaurants and parks. We use that data to gauge how much people are out and about in these communities. And what we see, indeed, is that when people increase mobility, we tend to see increases in cases and hospitalizations and deaths in the following weeks and months. And when people decrease their mobility, the pandemic starts to slow down. But the one thing the cell phone data doesn't tell us is what people are actually doing when they're going out in public, whether they're wearing face masks, whether they're keeping their distance. That's the big unknown.
So, Nick, you would take Lauren's mobility research and, as we said, public death records and crunch that with other data.
Yeah, I mean, what's so important about the Ensemble approach is that it takes the strengths of all of these different modeling approaches. And when you combine them together, you end up with something that is sort of greater than the sum of their parts. Some of the other models are using sort of social media activity on different platforms. There's a Facebook survey that our collaborators at Carnegie Mellon have been administering, and that provides a pretty interesting signal about the infection rates at counties and towns and cities mm-hmm. around the country. These are supplements to the standard public health data.
Google can see how many people are Googling, do I have COVID-19 if I lost my sense of taste? And Kinza Thermometers is looking at fever outbreaks in different areas. So there's just all sorts of different ways. But I want to get to what you guys are seeing.
I think there's a lot of uncertainty about what is happening right now. We're seeing big uptick in the movement data in some communities, and a lot of that is being driven by schools and college campuses. Based on the movement data alone, that suggests we could see an uptick in transmission, which might translate to an uptick in hospitalizations and deaths down the road. However, what we can't see in the data is how safely these campus reopenings are going.
Nick, you at the beginning of the month, we're seeing deaths decline a bit, which is great, but still staying at about 5,000 a week. The University of Washington estimate could be double that just several months down the road. But that could happen, right? With schools starting to open and people going indoors.
So one of the things that I think is so important to keep in mind as we try to find a crystal ball, if you were to go and scour the internet today for all the available data about COVID-19, you could get a pretty good sense of what's happening today. But it wouldn't be a perfect sense because people are floating around in the country, infected but asymptomatic, and it's really hard even just to get a perfect snapshot of right now. And then you step out one step further and you say, okay, now let's think about 1 week ahead and 3 weeks ahead. What we've seen is that for predicting an outcome like deaths, we can make fairly accurate predictions for the next few weeks. But looking past the next few weeks, a good analogy here is to think about weather forecasts. You know, if I'm trying to plan a trip next weekend, it's maybe worth looking at the forecast to see if it's going to rain 5 or 7 days from now, maybe even 10 days from now. But beyond that, don't bother because those forecasts aren't accurate.
Well, then what do you think, Nick, of the Washington University model, which projects all the way out to the end of the year?
There can really be value in looking at models to help us get a sense of what might happen much further in the future. However, any sort of prediction that you're getting out of a model like that is going to be so heavily dependent on all of the assumptions that are going into that model. What different governmental policies are going to be in place, how human behavior is going to change. So these models can be used to help explore what I call like a what-if scenario. What if everybody started wearing masks today and all the schools opened? Or what if bars closed and schools reopened? And you can imagine all these different scenarios. And these can be really useful planning tools for decision makers.
I will say, you know, when we make forecasts or put forecasts either on the ensemble or our own website, we make a point of being clear that we don't think you can forecast more than 3 or 4 weeks out. And when I think about these projections, they're valuable, but I don't think of them as forecasts. I think of them as plausible future scenarios. We, you know, as society and communities have control over the fate of the pandemic. What's going to happen beyond 3 weeks really depends on the decisions that we are making today as individuals and as communities. The IHME's projections through the end of the year, their projection suggests that if we're cautious in the months ahead, we may not even exceed 300,000 deaths. But, you know, if we go in the other direction, deaths could be over 800,000. And it's not like forecasting the weather where the atmosphere is going to determine what's going to happen. And we are going to determine what's going to happen. Mm-hmm.
I like that it's not like the weather in that we can do something about it, which you can't with the weather. But Nick, it is like the weather in that you can't look too far out. Let's take a second to say we're speaking with Professor Nick Reich, University of Massachusetts Amherst, and Lauren Ansel Myers, professor at the University of Texas Austin, about ensemble modeling the arc of the COVID-19 pandemic. That means combining studies. Is there a moment when you were looking at the data coming in and it hit you? Wow. And Nick, maybe I'll start with you.
The spring was such a blur, and some of the early indications of the seriousness was when early on we were conducted a survey of some modeling experts. Some of the estimates were incredibly pessimistic. Like, I think the upper range of number of deaths possible in the U.S. was 1 million for 2020. And I think it was maybe at that moment when it really started to sink in.
And Lauren, how about you?
It was, I want to say, very beginning of February, and we were analyzing some data that we had obtained by scraping websites from public health departments in 18 different provinces in China. And we realized that there were cases where a person had been infected by somebody with no symptoms. This was one of the first pieces of evidence of this pre-symptomatic transmission, of the silent transmission. And when we saw that, it was alarming. It was the first indication that this thing was going to spread swiftly and it was going to spread silently. And in fact, when we shared our initial analyses with our colleagues at the CDC, their answer was, oh no, you must have made a mistake. It became obvious that we were not going to be able to control the spread of this virus using measures that we had been able to use successfully to contain SARS.
Well, I want to ask you both, as we close, is it safe to say that, Lauren, right now with your model using cell phone data at the University of Texas at Austin, you see deaths maybe rising from 1,000 a day to almost 2,000. And Nick, you see them maybe declining a little bit, still staying at about 5,000 a week?
I actually really want to emphasize that we are at an unusually uncertain time, given the recent opening of schools and colleges. And so with all of our models, we could be anywhere from, you know, slightly elevated deaths per day from where we are today to really, you know, quite a bit higher death rate. The important message is the decisions we make today are going to impact the number of deaths that we see a month from now.
And I think that's one of the reasons taking these longer term forecasts with a grain of salt is so critical.
That's Nicholas Reich, professor of biostatistics at UMass Amherst. We also spoke with Lauren Ansel Myers, professor of integrative biology and statistics at the University of Texas, Austin. Thanks to you both.
Thank you. Stay safe, everyone.
Yeah, thanks again.